Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, I have made it a habit to read important speeches of Putin because I know that in America there's no way you're going to ever get access to them. All you're going to hear, if you hear anything at all, it's just going to be propaganda. So I thought I'd read Putin's Victory Day speech given, well, on Victory Day, May 9th, a couple days ago, to commemorate the end of World War II. But as time goes on, the revisionism of who won the war and the revival of open Nazism is getting more and more blatant and scary. I mean, when you have all these countries that are supporting Ukraine, and Ukraine has open Nazis in their security apparatus and their military and parts of their government, even though the people didn't elect them, they're there. And they have swastika tattoos and they're giving Heil Hitler salutes and they're tearing down monuments to Soviet World War II heroes and putting up monuments to Stefan Bandera. Stefan Bandera was the collaborator with Nazi Germany. He was one of the collaborators, like Vichy France, or I'm going to run through how the European countries that are now once again attacking Russia, how long they resisted Nazi Germany. But the point is that these people are openly supporting, I mean, Stefan Bandera and his organization, the OUN, killed hundreds of thousands of people, Jews, Poles, Russians, Ukrainians who weren't Nazis, who supported the Soviet Union. They killed hundreds of thousands of people. And the Poles are now like, well, yeah, we know Stefan Bandera killed a bunch of Poles, but let's not worry about who killed who. We just gonna support you anyhow because, hey, you know what? We want part of your country. But anyhow, I digress. So let's see just how long the countries of Europe actually resisted the Nazis. Belgium resisted for 18 days, then they surrendered. France, 6 weeks, then they surrendered. Netherlands, 14 days, then they surrendered. Luxembourg, 1 day. Woo! Denmark, 6 hours. And the thing about Denmark is, the Danes surrendered to the German motorcyclist who was conveying Hitler's request to the Danish king for free access through his country. The Danish king surrendered his crown to the motorcyclist to take to Hitler. Boy, they really fought hard, those Danes. I wonder why they're now openly supporting Nazis in Ukraine again, right? Poland, 5 weeks. Norway, 9 weeks. The United Kingdom, continuous resistance. And Russia, Soviet Union, continuous resistance. And then the United States, of course, they declared war in 1941. And FDR promised Stalin that the U.S. would open a second front so that the Germans would have to fight on two sides, right? But they didn't. They didn't open a second front until the Soviets had already beat the Nazis and were driving them back to Berlin. And the thing is, the reason that most people in Europe and America don't know who it was that actually beat the Nazis, I think it's because of the propaganda. I know I even fell for it. I watched the movie D-Day when I was a kid, and they made a big deal about how, oh, this was the glorious offense. It was just, they didn't mention it wasn't until June 44. They just were like, oh, it was the greatest thing ever. It was the battle that won the war, and it was a big secret. It was a big secret. We had to keep it secret from the Germans. So, okay, I believed it. Why would I not believe it? I was a kid. I believed everything the TV or the movies told me. But then when I was a teenager, I was reading The Diary of Anne Frank. And there was one part in there when she was like, when are the Americans going to open the second front? I want to be rescued. And if they'd only open the second front. And I'm like, wait a minute. The movie said it was a giant secret. So how could Anne Frank in a attic in wherever she was, the Netherlands, I think, where I forget where she was, how could she know about the second front? You know? That I thought it was a big secret. That's what the movies told me. And I asked my dad. My dad's like, it wasn't a big secret. And that's when he told me that FDR had promised in late 1941, early 1942, he'd promised Stalin that they would open a second front so that the Germans could be defeated more easily. So everyone knew there was going to be an opening of the second front. They just didn't know where or when. And they certainly didn't think it was going to take almost 3 years, right? So, yeah. So anyhow, that was a little eye-opening thing to me. But I was like, why didn't my dad tell me this before? And I saw a poll where they asked people in Europe right after the war who was most responsible. And the propaganda started immediately, of course. But they asked the people of Europe who was most responsible for beating the Germans. And vast majorities in every country went, well, the Soviet Union, of course. But the last time they took one of those polls, maybe a few years ago, after 70 years of propaganda, most of the countries in Europe, even though they were the ones directly involved, right, they thought that America, you know, America's late entrance in June 1944, really, that really turned the tide, man. They're the ones that beat the Germans. Absolutely amazing revisionism, but that's the power of propaganda. I actually was reading on some comment someone made that his dad had actually been a prisoner of war in a German POW camp. But his dad would never talk about it. He would just say it was horrible. It was too horrible to talk about. Well, okay. So then the kid starts watching Hogan's Heroes, which was a sitcom in the 60s, which made the German POW camps look like fun. So here his own father had been a POW in a German POW camp, but who was he going to believe? His dad, who wouldn't tell him anything, or the Hogan's Heroes, which told him it was a really good time? He believed Hogan's Heroes, and it wasn't until his dad was dying, like decades later, that he finally told him some of the stuff that went on in the POW camp, and the kid was horrified. He's like, but I thought the TV made it look fun. Anyhow, propaganda is an amazing thing. And the thing probably why these countries didn't resist very long. Greece lasted a long time, 219 days. That's a pretty long time. And Serbia also lasted a long time. Both Greece and Serbia, and to this day, they are not as apt to go along with the Nazi revival as the rest of the countries in Europe. Not only were some of these countries pro-Nazi, and that includes the royalty in the United Kingdom. That's probably why they didn't let that one guy become king. Instead, they made Queen Elizabeth the queen, because that one guy was just way too open a Nazi supporter. Forget what his name was, George or something. Anyhow, yeah, there was supporters of the Nazis in the United Kingdom, and there were supporters of the Nazis in the United States, too. Most notably the Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, but also Prescott Bush and others like that. So yeah, there was some real divided people in even the countries that resisted the entire time. But what the Germans also did was they bribed the generals in those countries to just surrender, the way the U.S. did and got punked a few years ago when they were trying to overthrow the government of Venezuela. And they tried to bribe the general, one of the top generals, and the general pretended to go along with it. Oh, yeah, I get a mansion in Miami, and I get all kinds of money. I get all the drugs and all kinds of things that I want. Sure, I'll go along with that. So the Americans concocted this big scheme with this general about how they were going to overthrow the government. And then they got punked. At the last minute, the general went, psych! I'm not a traitor to my country. And so that caused a mini scandal, not here, of course, not in America, because the mighty Wurlitzer propaganda never stops playing. But it was, and that's when I really realized, oh, that's how they did it in those countries. The Nazis went in and bribed them, just like they do so many, you know, the United States does now so many times. That didn't happen in the Soviet Union. It's not that there couldn't have been generals that could have been bribed, but Stalin fired him before the war started. I guess he just picked the one, you know what, you're a traitor, you gotta go. And the Nazis are still complaining about it. I mean, if you read the paper, you'll still see them complaining about, oh, Stalin fired his best generals, and oh my gosh, that was really bad for the war effort. Yeah, for whose war effort? For Nazi Germany's war effort. Anyhow, Norway only lasted 61 days. Did I already do Norway? Yeah. Poland, only 30 days. I'm surprised it took them that long. Belgium, 18 days. Holland, 4 days. And that's pretty much, some of these I don't have, so I couldn't tell you how long they lasted. But most of them didn't last very long. The only country in Europe that continually fought was the UK. And then, of course, the Soviet Union. But other than that, nope. They all went down, and they're still going down. So here is the thing. I thought I would read about also. So the pretense is that the countries in Europe are just being rude to Russia this year because of the special military operation that started last year. But actually, this started before that. The attacks on Russia, I'm pretty sure, well, of course, we all got it our entire lives, you know, with the TV and the movies and the books and the Tom Clancy novels. And, you know, we got continuous anti-Russian propaganda our whole life. But usually, when the old people were still alive, they might not have told their kids what actually happened in World War II, but they knew themselves. So when there was a Victory Day celebration, of course, Soviet Union and then Russia was always invited. I mean, you're not gonna have a celebration of the end of the war in Germany and not invite the main country responsible for the end of the war, are you? Yes, you are, especially this year. But even in 2019, UK had a celebration of D-Day, like I was just saying, the 1944 invasion of France, which is when they finally opened up the second front. So they invited the US, France, and Germany. They invited Germany, the people they were fighting against, and also Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Belgium, the Czech Republic, Greece, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Slovakia, and Denmark. So all these countries, Denmark, the one that lasted 1 hour, and then the king handed over his crown to the motorcyclists, and all the motorcyclists was going to say was, hey, is it okay with the king if we march our troops through your country? And the king's like, nah, that's not enough. Here, have my whole country. And they got invited to the D-Day celebration, but not Russia, which is a successor to the Soviet Union. So on this Victory Day, it got really, really bad. Moldovan police were confiscating victory symbols from citizens of the country celebrating the Soviet victory in World War II on Tuesday. So the victory symbols are usually St. George ribbons, which are these striped ribbons. I think they're orange and black or something like that. Anyhow, they symbolize the victory over Nazi Germany, and it is becoming illegal in multiple countries, including Qatar. I mean, why would Qatar? They threw out three Russians on Tuesday for wearing St. George ribbons at a world judo competition. So what does judo have to do with supporting Nazism? I don't know. Ask the Qatar police. You know, they just decided that, oh, we can't have people being anti-Nazi here at a judo conference. I mean, it's getting ridiculous, like I said. So Moldova did it, Qatar did it, and the Latvian parliament last month officially banned any festive events, meetings, marches, and pickets in celebration of Victory Day. 26 people were actually arrested, though, because they went ahead and said, you know what? No. We want to celebrate the end of the Nazis. No, 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 no. You're not allowed to do that in modern-day Latvia. Those are the Baltic countries. Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, those are some of the worst. But anyhow, they arrested 26 people. Most of them for placing flowers and symbols, again, St. George ribbons, prohibited by the Latvian government, such as a St. George ribbon, in places where dismantled Soviet monuments used to stand. One old man in a wheelchair was forced to remove his jacket because it said Russia on it. So the police were literally stripping old men in wheelchairs, or a old man in a wheelchair, making him take off his jacket because his jacket said Russia on it. And you don't think that Nazism is in resurgence in Europe? Yeah, I think it is, in the same places where it was 70 years ago. Coincidence? I think not. So what they're doing is, in all these countries is, after World War II, the people that defeated Nazism in Germany put up monuments celebrating the heroes that fought them. Again, the Soviet Union lost 27 million people fighting the Nazis. So they put up monuments and stuff. And these countries used to be part of the Soviet Union. So what they're doing now is, now they're tearing down the monuments and putting up other monuments celebrating the collaborators, or just, you know, just tearing them down. And in the meantime, anyone who actually was brought up, like me, being anti-Nazi, like my dad, he might not have told me the history at first unless I asked. He was anti-Nazi. He joined the military even before the war because he could see that the United States was going to get in the war and he wanted to fight the Nazis. But instead, they sent him off to fight the Japanese in Guam and Saipan. And his best friend in high school was a Japanese-American guy. And that guy they sent to fight the Germans. So go figure. You know, whatever. My dad was anti-Nazi. And so am I. I'm not going to give it up just because my ruling overlords are like, you know what? Now we've decided that the Nazis were actually the good guys. And we're going to have you salute, you know, give the Heil Hitler salute to Stefan Bandera. Because, oh, man of the people, man of the people. You know what I'm saying? Like George Carlin said, no one notices, no one seems to care that they are totally and completely doing a 180 yet again on the propaganda they're telling us. And for 70 years, we were anti-Nazi, but now we're pro-Nazi. And part of it is they want to destroy free speech in America. And so they're justifying it in some cases by saying, well, look, they have hate speech laws in Europe to make sure they can't say anything anti-Nazi. Well, yes, they have had hate speech laws in Europe for 70 years. What good did it do? Here we are in 2023, and you got people, I mean, okay, here's the thing. Latvia, the one that arrested the people for laying flowers on a monument that was torn down, they still allow annual parades dedicated to the Latvian Waffen SS Legionnaires, members of the combat branch of the Nazi Party's Security and Surveillance Agency. The most recent parade was held in March, 2 months ago, and featured hundreds of people marching in the Latvian capital to honor their compatriots who fought alongside the Nazis during World War II. So they allowed a parade of the Waffen SS, and they stopped people from laying flowers at a memorial. And you don't see anything? No one seems to notice. No one seems to care. I'm sorry, but this is ridiculous. There was a mob in Poland, and they were protected by the police, and they stopped the Russian ambassador from laying a wreath at a memorial to Soviet soldiers. So all he wanted to do was lay flowers at a memorial, and a mob shows up to attack him, and they stop him from doing it. Because, gosh, you don't want to celebrate the end of Nazi Germany, do you? No, you don't. Those hate speech laws they had, yeah, they really worked. And now the Democrats, who used to be the more liberal of the people in the United States, now they're all about hate speech laws. No, 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 you can't say mean things. You can't say mean things. Look how well they worked in Europe. You know what? If you paid attention, you wouldn't say dumb things like that. And Germany, this is the country that caused all the problems, right? They forbade both Russian and Ukrainian flags at their celebration. And then they're like, you know what? No. You can have Ukrainian flags to symbolize the Nazi regime in Kiev, but you can't have Russian flags because that symbolizes the Soviet Union that destroyed the Nazi Germany all those years ago. So Germany allowed Ukrainian flags, but not Russian flags. And the people in Germany that wanted to support the Soviet Union victory, they took it to court. And the courts, you know, oh no, because you know what? The courts have to go along with it. They have to go along with the agenda, or they won't, or the judges will lose their jobs, and they don't want to lose their jobs now, do they? No, they do not. And the anti-Russian stuff is getting friggin' ridiculous. Slovakia, just 4 teenage Russian girls got top scores at a math competition. It's a math competition. It's mathematics. What does that have to do with Nazism? Well, I don't know, but all I know is when the 4 Russians won, they took their names off of the list of winners because you can't have Russians. No, 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 no. We're Nazis now, so we have to get rid of the Russians. I mean, it's not just picking on teenagers is bad enough, but that isn't the worst of it. They took a Russian tree off this registry of awesome trees in the world. It's some sort of thing where their trees are celebrated around the world and the best trees of every country are celebrated. They took the Russian one off because, you know, Russian. I mean, this kind of bigotry and racism, basically, is not just allowed, it's celebrated. And I just find it appalling. Russian cats, they don't let Russian blue cats or whatever they are. There's some breed that comes from Russia. No, 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 you can't be in cat competitions anymore because we hate Russians. I mean, being anti-Russian is a way to be hateful and nasty and have it celebrated by the, you know, the ruling class, because the ruling class loves that stuff. They're all about that stuff. They're pushing that stuff. And people that like to hate, haters gonna hate, right? Yeah. That's what they're going to do. They're going to hang. It's embarrassing, you know, to normal people. It's embarrassing. But to the people that are up there in these top echelons of these organizations in these countries and these competitions and stuff, they know that if they want to keep their cushy jobs, they better cater to the ruling class. Then the ruling class is now thinking, you know what? We need more fascism. That worked out way better than this democracy thing. Letting people say whatever they want. They say mean things. You know, we can't let them say mean things. We can't let them say that. Fascism worked a lot better. We're going to go with that. So that's what's going on. And then Germany, first they said, well, you know what? This year, since Russia and Ukraine are fighting, really, it's Russia and Eastern Ukraine against the Kiev regime that was put in after the coup of 2014, but whatever. They say it's Russia and Ukraine. They're just disappearing 10 million Eastern Ukrainians. Nope, nope, those aren't Ukrainians. Those don't count. The only ones that count are the Kiev regime Ukrainians who stand for democracy, except for, of course, we overthrew their democratically elected president and put in a U.S. pick. But yeah, that's democracy. Mm-hmm. And they're banning political parties and they're banning free speech and they're throwing people in jail for journalism. But that's European values, the new European values. So anyhow, the first Germany said no Russian or Ukrainian flags at the celebration. And then they said, well, you know what? No, you can have Ukrainian flags, but you can't have Russian flags. It's just blatant. It's absolutely blatant. So I'm going to go ahead and read what Vladimir Putin had to say about that. He said, dear citizens of Russia, dear veterans, fellow soldiers and sailors, sergeants and petty officers, midshipmen and ensigns, fellow officers, generals, and admirals, fighters and commanders, participants of a special military operation, I congratulate you on Victory Day. Oh, I forgot to mention that every year the Russians usually have a parade remembering the people that fought and died in World War II. The Russians lost 27 million citizens. They lost, I think, 9 million soldiers, and then a whole lot of citizens died because the Germans went through. The Germans were trying to do basically what the Americans want in Ukraine right now. They tried to depopulate Russia so they could steal their land. They called it Lebensraum or something. It's a German word. I probably am pronouncing it wrong, but it means living space. They wanted that land, just the same as BlackRock and Monsanto and Cargill want the land of Ukraine right now. So they went in there and they wiped out whole villages. They killed women, they killed children, they killed old men, you know, they killed everybody. They did a siege of Leningrad, which lasted for almost a year, and millions of people starved to death, including Putin's older brother. Putin wasn't born at the time, but his mom and dad already had a son, and that child starved to death during the siege. So every year, the Russian citizens get together and they have what they call a immortal regiment. Well, it used to be the actual veterans of World War II that would march, but as they started dying off, they picked up a new custom. The people would march with pictures of the people they had lost. And this year, they had to cancel it because the Ukrainians have turned to terrorism against Russian civilians because what they're trying to do, as they say, they're trying to scare them and demoralize them and make them overthrow Putin and turn the country over to America. That's not going to happen, but they're doing it anyhow. They're terrorizing civilians. And so the Russians are like, well, you know, usually there's millions and millions of people that participate in this Immortal Regiment parade. We can't guarantee their safety against these terrorists. So they canceled that part today. They were forced to cancel the citizen part of the parade because of the Ukrainian terrorists. And by the way, Bandera and the OUN and those people, the collaborators with the German Nazis in World War II, for 10 years after World War II was ended and the German Nazis stopped, the Ukrainian Nazis kept up a campaign of terror. I think I mentioned last week, they killed like 35,000 people, Ukrainians, in that 10 years until the Soviets finally managed to put a stop to it. And the U.S. is openly now saying, boy, they did a good job back then. We supported them back then and we're going to support them again. If the Kiev regime loses, what we're going to do is we're going to support, train and arm Ukrainian terrorists, Banderists, just like we did from 1945 to 1955, just like they did with the Contras in Nicaragua in the 80s and ISIS in Syria in 2014. This is a tactic they use, and they've used it since, I guess, maybe the Ukrainian OUN was the first ones they used it on, but I might be wrong. They had a whole thing called Operation Gladio, which I have read about before on this show. They had terrorists in every country, actually. in Europe. Back to Putin. I congratulate you on the Victory Day in honor of our fathers, grandfathers, and great-grandfathers who glorified and immortalized their names, defending the fatherland. At the cost of immeasurable courage and huge sacrifices, they saved humanity from Nazism. Today's civilization is once again at a crucial turning point. A real war has once again been unleashed against our homeland, but we have rebuffed international terrorism. We will protect the residents of Donbass and ensure our own security. For Russia, there are no unfriendly, hostile peoples either in the world or in the East. Like the vast majority of people on the planet, we want to see a peaceful, free, and stable future. We believe that any ideology of superiority is inherently disgusting, criminal, and deadly. However, Western globalist elites still insist on their exclusivity, pit people against each other, and split societies, provoke bloody conflicts and coups, sow hatred, Russiaphobia, aggressive nationalism, and destroy family and traditional values that make a person a person. And all this in order to continue to dictate, impose up on the peoples their will, their rights, rules, and in fact, a system of plunder, violence, and suppression. They seem to have forgotten the consequences of the Nazis' insane claim to world domination. They have forgotten who defeated this monstrous total evil, who stood up for their native land and did not spare their lives for the liberation of the peoples of Europe. We see how memorials to Soviet soldiers are being ruthlessly and coldly destroyed in a number of countries. Monuments to great military leaders are being demolished. A real cult of Nazis and their accomplices is being created, and they are trying to erase and slander the memory of real heroes. Such an outrage on the heroism and victims of the victorious generation is also a crime, a blatant revanchism of those who cynically and openly prepared a new campaign against Russia, who gathered neo-Nazi evil spirits from all over the world for this. Their goal, and this is nothing new, is to achieve the disintegration and destruction of our country, to undo the results of World War II, to finally break down the system of global security and international law, and to stifle any sovereign development centers. Excessive ambition, arrogance, and permissiveness inevitably turn into tragedies. This is the reason for the catastrophe that the Ukrainian people are experiencing right now. He became a hostage of the coup d'etat and the criminal regime of his Western masters formed on its basis, a bargaining chip in the implementation of their cruel, selfish plans. For us in Russia, the memory of the defenders of the fatherland is sacred. We keep it in our hearts. We pay tribute to the resistance members who bravely fought against Nazism, the soldiers of the Allied armies of the United States, Great Britain, and other countries. We remember and honor the feat of Chinese soldiers in the battle against Japanese militarism. I am convinced that the experience of solidarity and partnership in the years of fighting a common threat is our invaluable legacy. It is a solid foundation right now, when the irreversible movement toward a more just multipolar world based on the principles of trust and indivisible security, equal opportunities for the distinctive and free development of all countries and peoples, is gaining momentum. It is very important that the leaders of the Commonwealth of Independent States gathered here in Moscow today. I see in this a grateful attitude to the feat of our ancestors. They fought together and won together. All of the peoples of the USSR contributed to the common victory. We will always remember this. We bow our heads before the bright memory of all those whose lives were taken by the war, before the memory of sons, daughters, fathers, mothers, grandfathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, relatives, friends. A minute of silence is observed. Dear citizens of Russia, battles that are decisive for the fate of our motherland have always become domestic, national, and sacred. We are faithful to the precepts of our ancestors, deeply and clearly understand what it means to be worthy of the heights of their military, labor, and moral achievements. We are proud of the participants of the special military operation, all those who fight on the front line, who provide the front line under fire, save the wounded. There is nothing more important now than your combat work. The country's security rests on you today, and the future of our statehood and people depends on you. You are honorably fulfilling your military duty, fighting for Russia. Your families, children, and friends are behind you. They are waiting for you. I'm sure you can feel their boundless love. The whole country rallied to support our heroes. Everyone is ready to help, praying for you. Comrades, friends, dear veteran, today each of our families honors the participants of the Great Patriotic War, remembers their relatives, their heroes, and lays flowers at military memorials. We are standing on Red Square, on the land that remembers the warriors of Yuri Dolgorukiy and Dmitry Donsky, the militia of Minin and Polsk, I'm butchering this, I know, the soldiers of Peter the Great and Kutuzov, the parades of 1941 and 1945. Today, the participants of the special military operation here are regular military personnel and those who joined the ranks of the armed forces during partial mobilization. These are the fighters of the Lugansk and Donetsk Corps, many volunteer combat formations, employees of the Rosgvardia, the Ministry of Internal Affairs, the FSB, the Ministry of Emergency Situations, and several other special services and departments. Greetings, friends. Greetings to all those who are fighting for Russia on the battlefield who are now on duty. During the Great Patriotic War, our heroic ancestors proved that there is nothing stronger, more powerful, and reliable than our unity. There is nothing in the world stronger than our love for the motherland. For Russia. To our valiant armed forces, for the victory. Hooray. All right, so that is the speech. Again, I'm sure you will not hear it or see it anywhere in U.S. Mighty Wurlitzer propaganda so-called media, but I thought you might like to hear what it is he actually said. I thought it was a very patriotic and stirring speech, and someone pointed out that the only country, or I guess group, that has ever defeated Russia were the Mongols, and that was like centuries and centuries ago, and eventually the Russians threw them out. So, you know, Napoleon tried, Hitler tried, now the United States is trying, and Russia has always beaten off people aiming to steal the motherland and kill her people. So anyhow, that's the end of Occupy the Airwaves. See you next week.